You are listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, January 10th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Louisville-based author Leah Angstman joins us in the studio this morning ahead of her debut book presentation at the Boulder Bookstore. Members of Denver's tattoo and body modification community gathered this weekend outside of the Soul Tribe studio in memory of those killed 2 weeks ago in a series of shooting attacks. And CityCast Denver sits down with Councilwoman Candy Sedabaca to discuss the ShotSpotter urban surveillance technology and her lone vote last week against renewing its multi-million dollar contract. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC News headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by Storytellers of Color. Host Rosanna Longo-Better speaks with dancer, documentary producer, and history teacher Musa Starseed. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, Sam Fuqua will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
A virtual town hall meeting took place yesterday to help victims of the Marshall Fire. Leaders from the state joined Boulder County legislators and representatives of the Federal Emergency Management Agency to address questions about recovery resources and priorities. S4 reports that the major issue is getting people into new housing and figuring out a path to rebuild. Those who lost their homes are not guaranteed that FEMA will close the gap between insurance coverage and the cost of rebuilding. However, there are federal loans to assist. The debris left by the fire is a problem in the recovery effort because many burned properties contain toxic and harmful chemicals that are unsafe for members of the public to dispose of without assistance. Plans on how to remove the debris must be approved by Boulder County. The issue of debris removal was also discussed Saturday during a neighborhood listening session for the downtown Superior and Rock Creek area, along with another one for residents of the Sagamore and original town areas. The Daily Camera reports that Mayor Pro Tem Mark Lackas said that homeowners who attempted to remove their own debris are opting out of the county and town doing it, and the cost of doing so could be as high as $75,000 per lot. Those who missed yesterday's virtual town hall can watch it online by going to the Facebook page of State Senator Steve Fenberg for a link to the full Zoom meeting. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden spent about 4 hours on Friday visiting the burn area that devastated Boulder County on December 30th. The president walked around Harper Lake in Louisville, hugging families and first responders. Biden urged people to hang on to one another and that the federal government will help thousands of displaced families. On Friday, U.S. Representative Joe Neguse introduced legislation that is aimed at preventing wildfires, funding firefighting programs, and increasing the ability of communities to recover from disasters like the Marshall Fire. Neguse said that communities can't be expected to bear the burden of recovery on their own. The Democrat from Lafayette represents areas of Superior, Louisville, and unincorporated Boulder County affected by the fire. The representative successfully led an effort to include $5 billion for wildfire recovery and prevention in the infrastructure bill that was signed into law in November. On Friday, authorities released the name of one of the two people who was missing after the Marshall Fire. The coroner identified the remains of Robert Sharp, 69 years old, that were found in the 5900 block of Marshall Road. The Daily Camera reports that the investigation into the second missing person continues. She has been identified by her family as Nadine Turnbull of Superior. As COVID-19 cases surge across the state, Colorado officials have reactivated crisis standards of care for emergency medical services. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said in a release on Friday evening that only the most severe patients will be taken by ambulance to hospitals, with less urgent patients referred to other health care services. In addition, ambulances can go to the nearest hospital, and some patients may be taken to urgent care or other non-hospital facilities. However, the state has not activated crisis standards for hospitals or acute care centers. The health department advised that if someone is sick and thinks they need emergency care, they should continue to use 911 and seek care as they would normally. In Boulder County, new COVID cases broke the single-day record on Friday as authorities reported 773 positive results. This number is more than 200 above the previous daily record. The Daily Camera reports that officials have previously said the growing case numbers are due to the Omicron variant, which now accounts for 100% of Colorado's cases. And the Boulder County Jail has reported the highest number of coronavirus infections it has ever had and is revising its arrest standards to reduce the inmate population. A federal magistrate judge has ruled that some medical staff and students at the University of Colorado who are challenging its vaccination policy will remain anonymous. 11 women and 7 men have sued the institution, saying that the vaccine requirement by the Anschutz Medical Campus is unconstitutional. The plaintiffs claim that they have objections to the vaccine because of the use of fetal cell lines used in its development. However, each was denied an exemption. Colorado Politics reports that the judge will allow them to remain nameless because there's a hostile climate toward those who choose not to receive a vaccine. The union representing workers at King Soopers grocery stores announced on Friday that a strike has been authorized to begin on Wednesday at 5 p.m. The union says the chain is underpaying employees and engaging in unfair labor practices. On Saturday, King Soopers urged the union to return to the negotiation table and asked for assistance from the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. We'll have more on the pending strike at King Soopers on tonight's labor exchange program at 6 p.m. The weather forecast through Thursday looks to be pretty much the same each day. Sunny or mostly sunny skies with highs in the low 50s. Overnight lows will be in the 30s. Right now it's about 25 in Boulder and Denver and 14 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm joined in the studio this morning by local author Leah Angstman, who will be presenting her debut novel tomorrow night at the Boulder Bookstore. Welcome to KGNU, and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
You live in Louisville, so let's start with what should be the first question. How are you, and how is your home?
I am doing all right, all things considered. Our home is still standing. We saw the very beginning of the fire, and we had to evacuate for several days, and it was a nightmare, but we're home now. Our home is still there, and my heart goes out to all the people who have lost their homes.
Turning now to why you were scheduled to come here before the fires broke out. You will be presenting your novel tomorrow night at the Boulder Bookstore. Your novel is Out Front the Following Sea. It's your first book. Tell us about it in your own words.
Yeah, it's my debut novel. It's a historical adventure epic of 17th century New England during King William's War and the tensions between the French and English settlers in the area. And it deals with a love story between a English woman and a Frenchman, and how the tensions of the time play out on their relationship and the whole town's relationship, including swashbuckling pirates and Quakers and Pequot Indians and a whole cast of characters.
And as you say, it's set in the late 17th century in New England, and is, I've been reading it, it's packed with historical detail. Tell us a bit about your academic background and how much research was involved to get that level of detail.
Yeah, most of the research is very current. It's not academic background, but it's I do a lot of research from town records and diaries of people at the time. I like to sift through maps and really, really boring stuff like price lists of how much everything costs and what sort of items people would be planting or eating. I really like to get into what types of fabric people would be wearing and just nitty-gritty details to be able to like help me paint a picture that sometimes challenges what we think the time period would be like in our minds, but just to really let the characters be very human.
And, you know, at the start of the pandemic, a lot of people were like, oh, I'm going to finally write my novel. Were you one of those people, or was this already in process before then?
I was not. This has been in process for 11 years. I actually did not write anything at all during the pandemic. I was so just stifled for any kind of thought outside of where does the next meal come from. But I wrote this after we moved from Boston to Palo Alto in California. Before we moved here, I was very much missing New England and had really been involved in its history at the time that I lived out there. And so I wrote this not necessarily about the area that I lived in, but about the area of that I was very interested in Connecticut. And it was kind of like my love letter to New England after I'd left it.
Well, Leah Angstman, thank you for coming by the KGNU Boulder Studios today. She will be presenting her debut novel tomorrow. That's Tuesday at 6:30 at the Boulder Bookstore. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Hundreds of people gathered on Saturday afternoon in front of Soul Tribe Tattoo on 1st and Broadway in Denver, site of the murder of Alicia Cárdenas and Alyssa Gunn Maldonado on December 27th. The space was the start of a series of murderous attacks that ended in Lakewood. Five people died at the hands of a man who alluded to the murders in writing beforehand in a series of self-published books. The community gathered to participate in an indigenous ceremony to heal and reclaim the land and people suffering from grief. Dance, singing, and drumming and burnt offerings set the stage for a procession around the block, led by children of the community. KGNU's Dave Ashton was there and shares this audio.
Mateo Nasukamati, thank you very much. Alicia was the block mom. She was the Soul Tribe mama. And we pray that we might continue to grow these communities, all of these communities that she gave so much to. And this is prayer, and also, as my sister Danica said, it's work. We have to do both. We can pray, we must pray, and we must work. You know, praying isn't enough. It's important, it's necessary, and it's not enough.
On stolen land, this man took the lives of our friends. But we will not let white supremacy win. I want you to say that with me. I will not let white supremacy win. I need you to say that like somebody died here because of white supremacy. I need you to say that because someone lost parents here because of white supremacy. One of the things that Alicia and Alyssa was good at was the work, and they were in the trenches. So this is what we mean when we say it's time to do the work, and you must do it in the trenches. If you are white, this is your problem. This is your responsibility, and you will need to answer it at every level. You will need to speak to it. You will need to pray it out. You will need to fight with it within yourself first and then your peers. If you are indigenous, if you are black, we will need to confront the inner conquistador within. The magic spell of torture and pain has imbued us with some of that sickness. So we too have a responsibility to check that within ourselves. Take your grief and walk with it. Run with it. One thing all of these victims did was work. So you will not make this a roadblock against your spiritual enlightenment and ascension. We will use this as fuel. You will walk with your grief. You will move with your grief. You will heal with your grief. And we will create something new from our grief. White supremacy has no claim here. We will return these businesses and this land back. We will not let his hatred imbue us with anything. We will use this as motivation to heal and be better. And we will heal. We will heal ourselves. We will heal each other. And we will heal this land.
I am Lady Speech Sankofa.
Lady Speech, I'm sad to have to see you again under these circumstances, to say the very least.
Yeah.
Would you mind telling KGNU's listeners about the people that we were here to celebrate today?
Today we were celebrating all of the victims, but most specifically Alicia and Alyssa. We were here to celebrate their life. We are here to uplift them. We are here to help their spirits pass. We are here to clear this block and this energy of negativity. We were here to celebrate and to give thanks for all of the contributions that they've given to this world and to all of us individually. We were here to uplift them, and we were here to remember them and to carry on their legacy and to make sure that we all had a concrete piece of that as we move forward in our grief and in our healing and in our living.
I've never really been impacted personally by like something that I've covered in the same way that I was today. The power, the strength of this community to pull this all together, how connected is that to the community of this art and this body modification and this personal transformation?
Every community Alicia and Alyssa were a part of, it was a family. And we take that seriously. So many of us, we are the only people we have. We were each other's chosen family. We were the only people to accept each other. We were the only people to love each other. We were the first people in a lot of spaces that we could be naked and free with each other. And that just carried over. And her death, it didn't break it. It solidified that bond. What this sacrifice was, it didn't break us. It didn't break us. It has made us bend. It has made us connect even more to ourselves, to each other, to this land, to our spirit guides, to our... Yeah, we are a family. We are a tribe for real. And we stand on that. And we welcome all who are here for love. We welcome all who are here for healing. We welcome all who are broken and want to put themselves back together. We accept all who are here to love and to be in their magic.
One response to past shooting attacks has been to increase funding for police and surveillance technology. Last week, the Denver City Council voted 10-1 to extend its contract with ShotSpotter Inc., a surveillance technology that detects the sounds of gunshots and alerts police with precise locations. Council members approved the $4.7 million deal to extend the city's contract for 5 years. CityCast Denver's Bree Davies spoke with Councilwoman Candy Sedabaca, the only member of Denver City Council to oppose the deal.
Councilwoman Candy Sedabaca, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were the lone no vote on this contract. Can you talk about why you opposed the extension of the ShotSpotter contract?
Well, there are several cities who are divesting from this technology because they recognize that this technology doesn't necessarily help disrupt, prevent, or even solve crime. And what it does require is that an officer goes out to respond to every sound detected. And so It's a $4.7 million investment that, in my opinion, justifies more policing in districts that are a majority of people of color.
Were you surprised that none of your colleagues had joined you in the opposition to ShotSpotter?
You know, surprised is not the right word. I'm never surprised by my colleagues and their failure to deliver for the people. It's kind of what I expect every Monday night going into it. And I would say also, I felt a little bit of the betrayal that constituents might have felt, because I sat right next to them when they were promising to do something about defunding the police and addressing racism. The shadiest part about Monday was that they pulled extra money for this contract from the general fund instead of from the police budget. So it's a way to expand the police budget without actually showing that. So betrayed and disappointed.
Do you see any possible role for something like ShotSpotter in policing? Like, if it was deployed in every neighborhood, would it make a difference? Or do you think that it's still sort of doing the same thing that we're seeing being a problem, which is certain communities get policed, other communities get supportive police?
My frustration is that it's not necessarily a bad technology. I just don't think that we've really monitored how effective it is in achieving the goals that we purchase it for. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a tool we should have in our toolbox, but the way that we're using the tool is inequitable. The purpose for the tool is not being met. And so that is why I don't think we should be making the investment in the tool at this point.
Denver Police Department Division Chief Ron Thomas said that 85% of alerts of possible gunfire that ShotSpotter reported between 2018 and 2021 did not correlate with any 911 calls, which he says would have alerted the police to gunfire and potential criminal activities. So it's like, it seems like they think the data works.
And in the same breath, he said that they don't assess if 911 calls came before the ShotSpotter alerts.
Oh.
So what was also clear on Monday night was that a lot of things were being made up on the spot. There were a lot of contradictions. One reporter kind of captured that. Elena Alvarez with Axios asked prior to the vote whether or not last week's shooting spree was captured on ShotSpotter, and they refused to give her any information on that. I asked the question on Monday night.
Did ShotSpotter identify any activity in last week's shooting?
Yes. So the I believe the incident at 12th and Williams was picked up by ShotSpotter.
She followed up afterward, and they basically said that was a mistake. No, it wasn't.
Wow. I didn't even think about those two things sort of in parallel, this idea of ShotSpotter being used, and then we have this horrific mass shooting that went on for more than an hour across multiple metro areas, and we couldn't use it in real time.
Yeah.
So the ShotSpotter contract is renewed for $4.7 million. We've seen the police get their budget increased over the last 2 years. And this is coming out of these public, very public conversations about defunding the police. Do you think that there's still an appetite for that within leadership in Denver?
Not within leadership. I don't think there was legitimately ever a real appetite amongst leadership in Denver. I think that the people want it. And I think it's becoming more and more clear that 40% of our budget should not be spent on these things. And hopefully if people are paying attention, the disappointment and betrayal that the people feel from our leadership right now will be reflected in upcoming elections. 2023 will be a very big year.
Yes. I'm like looking forward to it and dreading it at the same time.
I know. Same.
Because, like, you know, we don't know who's going to run.
Same, same.
Well, Councilwoman Candy Saitamaka, thank you so much for joining me and explaining this.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. I look forward to talking about more stuff in the future, so invite me back whenever.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Dave Ashton, Alexis Kenyon, and to the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play those messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. The Hightower Lowdown is coming up next, and after that will be Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longobetter. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.